I think the young ones, they just want to make it the biggest and punchiest dish. And sometimes a beautiful side dish isn't the punchiest dish on the menu. It has to have a real balance and flow of the experience. So just pull back and it's like, is that necessary?
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. How does a restaurant build its identity? Get comfortable in its skin and maintain a consistent offering that can be passed on from chef to chef, but be malleable enough to evolve and prosper too. Jake Ahrens is the executive chef of Nomad Sydney. Jake, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. It's great to get you on the show. You've got a big establishment there that does pretty big numbers. How are things traveling at the moment?
Great. We just finished that little bit of an Easter period. The numbers are really consistent. It's good to see the wide range of demographic coming back in, from corporates to first timers, a bit of a mix of everything. So it's really nice that after 10 years, it keeps evolving.
It's amazing. Nomad's been there for 10 years and become such a sort of almost an institution in Sydney, doing its own thing. And yet it's had such a sort of bumpy ride with the fire and everything. How is the restaurant at the moment in that sense, and how's it running?
Great. So, yeah, they had a bit of a bumpy ride with those fires, but now they built it to be bigger and better. And, yeah, it's a beautiful space, very generous open space. And, yeah, from travellers, first-timers, Sydney-siders, it's a great destination to come and dine.
You mentioned it's a little bit bigger. Give us a sense of the scale of Nomad. How many staff are you dealing with, and what sort of numbers are you doing?
So staff-wise, for back of house and the kitchen, depending on the time of year, so currently it can be from 30 to 40 chefs on a roster. And then front of house is matched that plus a little bit more. 7 days, so 7 lunches, 7 dinners open throughout the whole entire week. So it's a big team. Sometimes it feels very, very small, but it's a grand little industrial space that, yeah, it's a real nice family kind of feeling at Nomad.
You've been there a couple of years now. How do you manage such a big team and sort of put your energies to get the best out of everyone?
I don't know. I think I'm a little bit cray-cray sometimes. These are our creative types. We get a little bit crazy sometimes. But no, the team, we're very, very lucky. We have a lot of passionate guys in the kitchen. The team, again, 7 days, sometimes you might not see someone. But, yeah, there's a beautiful management line that we divide and conquer. There's only so much you can as this individual do per week. So, yeah, we're very lucky with our senior team and the team below.
We've had Jackie Challenor on the show a few times now over the years. What's she like to work with?
Amazing. Jax, we have very similar philosophies. We're both very people person, and it's still a business, but, yeah, what's fair for staff and what's going to get the best out of them. So, yeah, we work really well together, from product and, yeah, the people piece. And, yeah, everyone's just an individual first. So what do people actually need from a best working environment, I guess?
There aren't many people in Sydney that probably haven't eaten at Nomad, but there's many across the country that may not have. Tell us a little bit about what you guys are doing and the sort of offering that you have.
So our offering, it is that Mediterranean, Middle Eastern, again, with a touch of Native Australian. We pretty much try as much as we can to do from scratch, from making our own creme fraiche, our own charcuterie program that the team make, and the months of labor and love that goes into that. There's definitely everything we try to do is touched a little bit of kiss from the fire. So wood fire grills, wood fired ovens, the signature flatbreads. Yeah, so fire, and then just pretty much making everything we possibly can. And if we don't know how, we'll try to find out.
Are there challenges with making everything in-house in an age where there's so many establishments that don't?
There definitely is. It's a labor. So, yeah, there's the man hours behind it. And you're making a charcuterie item or salami, so your recipe testing, again, it's not a strength of mine overly. So we try to work on some different recipes and do a lot of research. And some of those recipes can take 6 weeks to 8 months for it to fully cure or dry out. So you're like, fingers crossed, and a lot, again, it's a high risk item. So yeah, there's a lot of recording. So you might get to the end and go, oh, maybe it needs a little bit more percentage of fat. So you start again. You're like, okay, change that recipe, tweak it. So yeah, sometimes you win some, wing it. Or sometimes you're just like, okay, let's go back to the drawing board. It wasn't quite right what was in my head of the execution I wanted to achieve from that particular product. So, yeah, it takes time.
You do have an extraordinary charcuterie program there. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing and some of the key sort of things that you're making.
We call it our selection. So there's 4 to 5 items on that plate per day. So at the moment, we've got some beautiful legs that we've just put in that will, there's a few different sizes. So some prosciutto. So we're going to be making our own prosciutto. There's capicola, there's some coppa, some lonza, some eye rounds of brazola, some salami testing with squid ink and pork. What else have we got going in at the moment? There's some guys, some of the team are working on some sausason. So yeah, we just keep playing around. Those prosciuttos will take between 18 to 2 years, so it's going to be a long process, but for a good outcome.
Well, I want to explore your food and what you're doing there at Nomad a little bit later, but take us back to when you were young. Where did you grow up and what sort of role did food play?
I was originally born in Brisbane, but it doesn't really count if we moved to Sydney when I was about one, so I can't really claim that. But I still support State of Origin for Queensland. Still going to go there. on the south side of Sydney, so a place called Oatley, just outside of the Shire, not in. I'll clarify that one. Just outside the Shire for the last 30 years, we pretty much grew up in the same house. Beautiful national park. It's very quiet, very suburban community. It was beautiful. Loved it. But growing up, food, a bit of a hurt, nervous one. My mum would say is not the best cook. So she's got an English background heritage. So it was meat and 3 veg. Some of those beans looked a little bit brown, or the carrots looked not quite orange. So dad always cooked as well. But yeah, growing up, we're very fortunate, very lucky. Big outdoor space, so barbecues, very fond memories of barbecues in summer, sitting around the pool, or dad just getting some fresh bread and prawn rolls. So yeah, food was very important to sit around the table as a family. It was a must. It was non-negotiable, really. We had to sit around the table.
When were your first steps into hospitality, and when you thought, well, maybe a career as a chef is for me?
I originally started off studying at university industrial design, and during that period, dad's like, well, I'd rather you focus on your studies and for your allowance, do you want to cook 3 times a week and I'll give you a small allowance? So I started cooking just at home. So I was like, sure, I'm not really engaged in those studies anyway, but sure, let's keep going with that and I'll take an allowance. Too much computers is not for me. I'm not going to sit in an office. So my brother is also a chef. Well, one of my brothers, I have two brothers, is also a chef. So we always cooked at home, and to get that allowance, my brother became a chef first, and that competition years when you're younger, it's like, no, that's what he wants to do. I don't want to do what he's doing. So I didn't put those connections together straight off, but I finished those studies and then always cooking at home. Everyone's like, I think you should actually try to be a chef, and I think this is a bit of a passion for you. You should really do it. I'm like, no, that's my brother's thing. So it wasn't until about a year after I finished my studies, and then it was like, do you know what? I'm just going to start my apprenticeship.
Wow. What was some of, before we get into that, what was some of your signature dishes when you were sort of cooking for a bit of pocket money?
I had to clean up as well, so I'm not going to lie. I would have been a one-pot wonder. How do I get my allowance without making as much mess and have to clean it up? no, it was dad's like, okay, what do you want to kind of cook? So I'll go buy it. He was like, I'll go buy it if you give me a bit of a list. So it was putting those recipes together or what's happening. And again, very fortunate we had these beautiful European, Italian fruit and veg that you knew them by name growing up. So you're like, they had the best produce and you see them and you say hello. So if it's just a steak off the barbecue, love a potato bake, keep it simple, stupid, really.
You mentioned you started your apprenticeship. Where did you do that? And do you have any stories of what it was like for you?
Yes. So on my mum's side, they never ventured really into hospitality, but my mum's brother, so my uncle, they bought a small hotel down in Wollongong in Mount Kembla. And they're like, do you want to come down? Do you want to cook? So I started my apprenticeship. It was a really small hotel pub, slightly up the mountains in Wollongong. And it was beautiful. I hadn't moved to Wollongong, so I was kind of like venturing first time out of the home, moving away from home for a little bit. So I really loved it. It was a very small team, so you got to do everything. I had no idea what I was bloody doing, but I'm like, I would begin watching shows or developing recipes. Yeah, there's a head chef called Dane at the time. He loved teaching and really invested in sharing his knowledge. So yeah, I actually really, really enjoyed it, getting to know people within that team and front of house and start developing those relationships as a small family, I guess.
As you started to build your career in those early years, what were the really sort of important venues and people that helped carve a path for you?
It was definitely Mount Kembla, learning that my apprenticeship and following my whole apprenticeship there. I thought I was lacking from jumping to a different job or new experience, but showing commitment and staying there for quite a while, I got to see a different people and chefs. And then I moved back to Sydney and started working for Merivale. My first job for Merivale was at Uccello. It was very busy in Ivy. It was a monster. But to work with a chef called David Lovett, it was pretty pivotal. Very generous man that loved sharing his knowledge and really cared about the people and his team. He would take us out for dinners and lunches. We'll go out for picnics or whatever. It was a real, real kind of family. Like, it wasn't just superstar solo people within the team. It's how we worked really well together.
You worked in quite a few different venues during your time in Merivale. Tell us about some of them and what you took from them.
So starting off with Merivale was Uccello. So started off as a demi. They moved a few of those ranks up from CDP, Junior Sous, and then Senior Sous. And then my first head chef role was at Ash Street Cellar, a beautiful little wine bar in that laneway. And then on to Bar Toddy's, to open Bar Toddy's and then to renovate it into a bigger space and then to reopen again after COVID. I think it was the real start at Ash Street Cellar. It was hard. It was really hard doing breakfast, lunch and dinner in a small team. So
yeah, such a tiny kitchen and venue as well.
Very tiny kitchen. So we had four people in the team at peak. So if one person's sick, there goes 25% of the team and you're doing breakfast and lunch and dinner. So yeah, you're creating menus for like a breakfast, lunch and dinner for a wine bar. So it was multiple different menus at different kind of clientele. So yeah, it was hard, but I loved it. I loved all aspects of that, from breakfast, lunch and dinner.
What was your food like then, thinking back to it?
Always had a bit of a Mediterranean twist. I love traveling to Europe and taking on the simplicity of a really good olive oil or spice or product. Again, 1, 2, 3, 4 items on a dish. If they're just really good items, don't overcomplicate it. Just keep it simple and, I don't know, make shit tasty.
you mentioned you love traveling to Europe and it's influenced your food. Is there any sort of trips or experiences that you had on your travels that have helped shape you as a cook?
Yeah, so it was my first, I think about 6 years ago, I think it was one of my first big trips to Europe. It's like, okay, I've worked, I'm going to take 4 weeks off and or 6 weeks off and I'm going to travel. I love Italy, and one of those big trips was Italy. So my partner's Italian. I really vibe with Italy. I can sit and have a spritz or a nice glass of rosé in the sun by the beach, eating a beautiful grilled piece of fish that's just got a bit of lemon and olive oil. Bliss.
Yep, it's a way to live. You spent a bit of time working with Mike Eggert as well. What's he like? Do you have any stories of what he's like to work with?
Again, he's another people person. He loves developing young chefs. Again, just products. He can make things just tasty. Play around with a brief, play outside the box. Again, you see Toddy, sometimes it's not full Italian or... But yeah, just keep it really simple and just make it delicious.
There's a sort of underlying theme of simplicity across your food, Jackie Challenor's food, Mike Eggert. Are there challenges with keeping things so simple?
Yeah, I think sometimes I will come up with like a dish or a concept and like you keep throwing things at it and you're like, okay, what am I doing? That's not what I want to achieve from it. Or it's not quite the right olive oil or the right spice. You're like, actually, it doesn't need that. It doesn't need that. It just needs a little bit more acid. Start pulling back to really showcase those three or four beautiful ingredients. It's just masking by adding way too much.
Is that hard to sort of train and instill in your team, that sort of level of restraint when it comes to cooking?
It is. It is. I think the young ones, they just want to make it the biggest and punchiest dish, and sometimes a beautiful side dish isn't the punchiest dish on the menu. It has to have a real balance and flow of the experience. So just pull back and it's like, is that necessary? Is it complementing? Is it adding any value to that particular dish? So showing those restraints, I think that comes from confidence as well as you develop your own taste and style. Okay, actually, just pull that back. It's not needed, and I'm going to stand by that dish. It's not needed at all.
How did the gig with Nomad come about?
With Nomad, I've known Jackie. My brother, again, have known Jackie for quite a while. We grew up with mutual kind of friends or friends in common growing up around when we were like 17, 18. So some house parties and mutual friends. So we always kind of knew each other in some kind of aspects. So we knew of each other, had that connection. Jack's also worked at Merivale for a little bit as well. So we kind of crossed paths, some few different mentors from like Christopher Whitehead. So we kind of knew each other, but not fully. I took a little bit of time off after Merivale to go traveling. I'm like, I just need a bit of a break. And Jax is like, what are you doing? Let's have a chat. Let's get a coffee and go for a walk.
What was it like at first when you joined the team there?
It was scary. I went traveling for 8 weeks. I went to Europe. One of my brothers lives in Europe, so I went and saw them for 8 weeks. So I really switched off from that work mode, so it was really hard to get back into waking up on a pattern, regularly, again, the mindset of getting back into work. A little bit of overthinking before I started, I guess. Again, it is a 10-year business. It's established. I'm walking into 40, 30 chefs. Same again for front of house. I'm like, oh God, I'm starting from scratch again. I was like, hi, my name's Jake. And hi. I'm really good with faces, but names, I was terrible. So I was like, oh shit, how am I going to remember all of these people very quickly? And again, you're starting at the top. So they're expecting a few perfections or maybe some not fair expectation. So I was like, oh crap, how's this going to work out? So it was a slow start. So I was like, guys, this is just me. I'm going to get to know you personally first, and then we'll see how we can complement each other. There's no ego on my end. So I was like, hey, how are you? All right, Sylvie. So what do you actually like doing outside of work? How do you cook? They're like, oh, you just want to chat? I'm like, yeah, I just want to get to know you guys first before we start creating a little bit of magic.
Well, you've done some amazing things there. Was there a moment when you felt sort of comfortable in the role that the team, everyone was all sort of on the same track?
Yeah, so I was very lucky. So when I first started as well, it was a co-head chef role with Abby Kitchen that we kind of we worked together for a little bit at Merivale as well. So we had a relationship. When it's a business of 7 days, 7 lunches, 7 dinners, is to share that responsibility. And I really reacted to that really well, being able to share that workload and expectation and, okay, we two heads are better than one. I didn't put too much pressure that, oh, God, I have to do everything alone. So the magic started happening with Abby. We already had a connection, so it was to build on that connection. The staff, there's a real core team that have been here from 2 to 5 years, so they know this business inside and out. So it's to really promote their strengths and to rely on them. And I was like, it was in about the 8th month park where I felt most comfortable. And then when that nonverbal communication starts happening, when you're doing 300 to 400 people for service, that you turn around 3/4 way through that service, you're like, oh, fuck, shit, this is good. Sorry, swearing. Shit, this is good. And you finish service, you're like, yeah, that was banging. Like the timing, communication from front house to back house, yeah. And it was, yeah, relying on their existing suppliers and bringing some of my connections as well to really complement the flavors and food and suppliers. Yeah, just started seeing about eight months for me to feel comfortable.
Producers are really important to what you do as well, and you've got some wonderful relationships with suppliers and producers. Are there any that really stand out that are important for what you want to do on the plate?
Yeah, they all play their part. There is nothing better. Again, we're turning into autumn at the moment, so you start planning new dishes or already have planned them. But it's setting up those meetings with suppliers like Toluca Park, and we generally just get our eggs from there, and it's like, what pigs have you got coming through? And he's like, do you want me to slaughter some for you? And I'm like, absolutely, or just really, really taking on their passion. And there's nothing better talking to a farmer or supplier, Swift or Sticks Farm, and you're talking to them and they're just so passionate about a lettuce or their beautiful baby pigs, and it's like, I could sit here for hours. So to be honest, all of them, all of our suppliers that we use, from just getting our zucchini flowers from one particular farmer and hearing him talk about zucchini flowers, I didn't think it was that interesting until I hear him talk about it for an hour. And I'm like, oh, God, it's been an hour. I actually have to be functional and get a roster done today. So, yeah, any of our suppliers, just hearing their passion, it's the best part of the job, to be honest.
Well, you're leading a large team there and just doing so amazingly well. What sort of advice would you have for someone that might be taking on such a big role and a leap like that in their career?
Divide and conquer, like really trust. So divide and conquer and just trust. Like there's a beautiful management team here. I'm only one person. I can only get 10 jobs done. And if I try to do 20, 10 of those jobs are going to be really shit. To be honest, and it's like, okay, you do those 5, I'll do these 5 to 100% capacity. I trust you more than myself. I say it to our apprentice, first year apprentice, I'm like, trust me, you are much better at this than I am, so I trust you more than me. And they give me that bit of a side eye, I go, no, I'm being really honest, I trust you more than me on this one, so thank you for being you. And I will focus on my other job of forecasting at the moment, but just trust the team.
I know you mentioned that you really love Mediterranean food, and that weaves through the menu, and we're coming into autumn. Is there a couple of dishes that you could take us through that really sort of exemplify sort of you on a plate at the moment at Nomad?
So like just over this weekend, we got some beautiful pumpkins from up the coast in the Hawkesbury. And again, they were picked like the day before, and it's just beautiful. Straight in the wood-fired oven, so a lick of fire and a little bit of smoke, and just adds that extra bit of flavor. Some brown butter and some beautiful whipped tahini and a couple of pepitas that have been spiced up with a bit of isopepper and some fennel seeds. I think, like, just very, very simple, a bit of fire, a little bit of fat, and just the sweetest little pumpkins you can. So just simple, simple, simple. Or any of our cuts that are coming through. We got some beautiful goats that we made some. Again, I like to have a bit of a play on. I'm like, what do I want to eat? So be a little bit selfish sometimes. You think you're trying to please every single customer. I'm like, okay, let's make a play on kebabs, really. Like this goat shawarma empanada with some goat's milk lab. No, I'm like, it's a tastes like a kebab with garlic sauce. So these beautiful little milk-fed goats. And I was like, okay, let's just do a play on a kebab. Like, have some fun with it, guys. Like, we don't have to be so serious all of the time.
That sounds amazing. You're really sort of the talk of the town and doing amazing things there at Nomad at the moment. But what do you love about what you're doing?
Here at Nomad, I love, again, the freedom. So the owners, there's a lot of trust. So Al and Rebecca give us a lot of space to play around with, from products and people and time frames of budgets and those kind of things. So it's just really nice to be back at people and the product is number one and number one, like it, number one and number two. So playing around with produce and tasting and communicating and sitting down and talking about those, spending time talking about it, we really forget sometimes. It is a bit of a brain trust, so very lucky that they give us a lot of space and trust to do that.
Well, it's amazing what you're doing there, Jake, and I can't wait to see what you do from here on as well. We've loved having you on Deep in the Weeds to hear just a part of your story. Please keep in touch and we'll catch up again soon.
Amazing. Thank you for having me.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we take a deep dive into the lives of the incredible people who ply their trade in the food and hospitality sector. Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen. Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds Podcast or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au. Stay safe and be well.